Oh my God, where is this year gone? Like, I have no idea.
Yes. It's going to be probably March 2020 by the time you listen to this episode.
Hey, there's really no need for that.
Why? Really, you need to put this on the episode and apologize to your listeners.
Yeah, I've been a little lax. The Hito was shaking her head instantly, so for feedback.
Rigorously.
Yeah. So, it's been my fault. I get it. We've been a little lax, but we're trying to keep our schedule going.
The word is I, not we.
No animals were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Except Chirag.
In case you're just tuning in, this is The Two Vegans. And if you haven't guessed already, I'm Chirag.
And I'm Hito.
And today, we are going to be talking about something that a lot of people are talking about.
The Game Changers.
Yeah,
yay,
so...
Yay!
So for those of you who don't know, The Game Changers is a documentary. It's out on Netflix. If you haven't watched it yet, I highly recommend that you do. But we'll talk more about that. And it's a documentary that's focused primarily around athletes. And sport endeavors and everything in those respects. Let's get started by talking. Do you want to do like initial impressions first? Like, what did you feel?
So I thought firstly it was a very, very well made documentary. I'm kind of on the fence whether I should be very excited or whether I should be a little bit sad. It actually caters to people's needs of turning vegan for themselves rather than the environment and the animals. So that kind of hurts me a little bit, I'm going to be honest. And I know this is not a very popular opinion, but it is what it is. But I'm also quite excited that because that is the norm, these people have quite hit it on the right spot with this topic. It speaks about everything right from strength, energy levels, protein intake, animal agriculture, just everything has been fit into this one beautiful package.
I did think it was really well made. It was very watchable. For me, it was like I felt like it was a very easy watch. Like I didn't feel like it was very intense. I didn't feel like, you know, I was being bombarded with information that was going to not only just upset me but also just tax me as a person, as something to watch. So I think it was very easy to watch. And we'll talk about it a little bit, the way they told the story and the way they unfolded the information, I think was very, very well done, which I think allows for us to be like, you can relax and watch it, but you can gain so much like coming from it as well.
And I'm glad that they have had a strong support from a lot of producers. There's Jackie Chan, there is, who else is there?
So there's James Cameron, obviously quite a noted filmmaker, but Arnold Schwarzenegger, who also played a bit of a role in the documentary itself, has produced it. You've got Lewis Hamilton, who was also on it. Novak Djokovic, who is quite a leading tennis player and quite a big advocate for plant-based diets just in general. Anyway, he talks about it in interviews and other things as well. So we have a lot of athletes who are part of the production, including James Wilkes, who pretty much narrates and takes you through the documentary.
Yeah, and I guess just towards the fag end of the episode, they did speak of animal agriculture. But that was just a little bit. That wasn't the driving factor of the show, right? As you mentioned, it was athletes, it was health. So we've got documentaries, obviously, for animal cruelty and the environment, such as Cowspiracy. And this is, I guess, the first one that actually touches upon the health aspect of veganism. So I guess we're all covered now. So yeah, so that's what I think. I think it is literally the game changer in the vegan world right now. And well done to them.
Keeping in this in the same tone as well, I think one of the things that was interesting for me, I watched this documentary much later than a lot of people. I mean, it's been out for a little while, but I've heard about this documentary a lot, right? And I've heard about this documentary a lot, not just from vegans, but actually for one of the first times from a lot of non-vegans, and rather not just non-vegans but like meat eaters, right? Having watched it and actually being quite affected by it. Which I thought was really interesting because I had received a lot of comments from people and I was taking those comments into watching it, right? So I was constantly kind of looking at the way they structured that story and the way they talked about it because I know that it has actually genuinely impacted a lot of meat eaters in what they're doing, because now they've made it personal.
Yeah, so on that point, I had somebody on my Facebook, hardcore beef eater, made fun of vegans all the time, made these jokes about how vegans eat grass and they never get the nutrients. And, you know, what he had his idea of some animals that are pets and need to be. And he, because he was also rescuing cats and dogs, reaches out to me and says, "Hey, I know you're vegan. Can you help me? I just watched this documentary and I want to be vegan, and I am absolutely shocked about whatever I have seen." And I said, "Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know anything about nutrition, so it would be best if you consult a nutritionist." Yeah, then I obviously guided him to a lot of local resources on how he could go vegan and so on. And he said, "Can you come shopping with me?" And I said, "Yeah, sure, let's do right. that. I mean, you know, I can just show you around, and so that it's easier for you. It's not hard at all."
Right.
So, I mean, I was very pleasantly surprised, because that guy was somebody that could have probably taken years to even kind of acknowledge the fact that, okay, no, you know, beef is not life. But this one documentary just changed him overnight, and he's pretty hell-bent and quite at it, because he's like, "My wife is making fun of me now, but he's like, I don't care, I still want to do this, so help me." And I'm like, "Yeah, okay, sure." So yeah, so like you said, you know, I'm seeing a lot of mention of this documentary as well amongst my friends and other people who did not quite understand veganism at first, but now they're like, "Okay, you know, if we're gonna die, then we better turn into vegans right now."
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've seen this, we've been doing this for a little while, both from the podcast, but also just in our general lives, that we've talked about this so many times, right, about the disconnect that people face from where their food comes from. And we think animal cruelty is something that people should, it should switch people's on like a little light bulb, like the moment they see it, but actually that's not what really happens. And we've seen that in real life, right? We've seen tons of people be like, "Yeah, okay, I know that they're dying, but what am I going to do?" Whereas here, I think because they turned the story, they made it personal, they talked about your health, the fact that you are having a better quality of life, even if you're eating unhealthier plant-based foods, right? Even then, your quality of life is going to be better than a pure meat diet or a very heavy meat diet. I think it just suddenly starts to turn the tables on people's own quality of life. And we all know, by the way, that we are all living in a generation that's not the most healthy, if you look at just general averages and when you look at diseases that are related to it, whether it's blood pressure, diabetes, or cholesterol, and all the related things around that, we've seen it's very high. I mean, it's affecting everybody, right? So I think that's why I think this really has resonated with people, rather than the shock and awe thing that most documentaries will be like, "Look at how the animal is dying. Like, how does this not move you?" And I mean, I completely understand. I know it works for some people, but I do think that it doesn't work for some, and I think this is the way to address that. It's nice when Hital agrees with me entirely. And doesn't have anything to argue with. Like, "No, but..."
I never argue with you. What are you talking about? If we were arguing, we wouldn't have run this show for 2 years now. We recently had our anniversary and you missed wishing me.
This is our anniversary episode. You happy anniversary. For this. Yeah, I did it.
Happen!
Happen! Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, my God, that's back.
It never went. It never left us.
Oh, no, that's back.
When is it, by the way?
I think it's the 20th. 17th. Okay.
Talking about diabetes and all those things, within the documentary, he also actually shows issues close to his home, which is his father, who's now like a 65, 70-year-old guy with a heart disease. And there's a beautiful point that he makes, that just because in the past your parents or your ancestors died of heart diseases does not mean that you have to. And it struck me, because all this while, everyone talks about genetics, everyone talks about family health and, you know, history and things like that. And I was like, "Oh yeah, you know, because my grandfather had a heart disease, I will most definitely have it as well." And we just think like that, but nobody goes an extra mile to think, why did that happen? You know, what was it then? Because science, technology, everything has developed so much, right? So what made my grandfather have a heart disease, and why is it so necessary that I will definitely have it? People are just blindly like, "Oh, okay, if they had it, I will definitely have it." And that particular statement, I was like, "Oh yeah, you know, I mean, unfortunately, I have Parkinson's in my family history. And I'm constantly scared, right? I'm very worried, and I feel like, you know, everyone says genetics, so I'll also probably get it, but I just may not if I work on myself now. At my age, when I'm 60, I most likely will not have it rather than have it, you know. And food is such a huge part of what your life will be. So I guess that was really good that he showed somebody from his own family and showed their transition. Obviously, it wasn't a very longer transition. His father has just probably turned more plant-based than a meat eater, but also he's managed to convince somebody who has these age-old tradition culture of eating meat. And it was very beautifully shown how they're sitting around the dining area and the mother is like taking notes of the ingredients that she now needs to have in the house, and she's replacing the beef with the tomatoes. And the father's like, okay, fine, you know, let me just try it anyway. What's the harm? And he does. It would be good to have a part two to see how his father gets along.
Yeah, and I think it's so important, like you said, right? Like, we, again, it's these age-old norms you're just told. I think it's also an easy out, right? Like, if you have a cholesterol problem or you get diabetes, you just turn around and you're like, yeah, well, you know, it's in my family. What am I going to do? And you can continue eating crap. So definitely, I mean, I think there are a lot of studies even already today that show that there's a direct correlation with the food. I mean, they highlighted many of them. But even if you look at things like cancer and stuff, I mean, there's a lot of conversation and discussion around the fact that cancer has its roots in the kind, what we're putting into our bodies. Now, some of it is not entirely in our control, which is part of the problem in terms of some of the additives and things that are in there. We've seen sort of links to these sort of chemicals in our food. Whether they're done for taste additives. Additives, but even otherwise, that are kind of being linked to it and all that. But there is definitely a correlation of some kind. And I think it's so important that we start to realize that. Again, and across many people, not just his father, but even himself and others, they kind of show that, you know, switching to a plant-based diet, what it has done for their lifestyle, what it has done for them in terms of how they are... you know, just general health-wise, right? What it has been doing for them for the last few years. So we had that, you know, that trainer who switched to a plant-based diet, and he's been doing it for, I think, 4 or 5 years now, and he's recommending it to everybody. And then he was saying that he had this 20-year-old guy and him kind of doing an endurance test and him being outlasting this very, very, what should be a much younger, fitter person, just on the grounds that he's like, you know, and I know this has a lot to do with what I'm eating. So which brings us to, I think, that point where he talks about the effect of just the one plant-based meal, which I think is really interesting. So we've just been talking about like the sort of the longer term benefit, right? But they had a couple of places where they kind of scientifically showed what just having one plant-based meal does to things like your bloodstream, right? So I think, again, there's, you know, it's so relatable because you kind of, they kind of distill something that I think is a big concern for a lot of people to be like, well, I can't be 100% vegan, right? And of course, the documentary makes a larger purpose to be like, that's fine. Start somewhere. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger himself is like, well, do it one day a week and go from there. But I think it was so interesting that they were showing that one meal can have such an impact, not only to you as an athlete and your ability to endure sports, but just what it does to your bloodstream. And, you know, they showed the coagulation of thing compared to one day before, one day after, one meal. And I think that itself is so hard-hitting, right? Because it's like, you know, we're not talking about changing everything. But if you try to incorporate every meal that you incorporate, instantly there is a difference.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of the show, by the way, the entire blood test. And of course, there was... the part on the masculinity that we can speak about in a bit.
Yeah, I think it deserves its own section, yeah.
Yeah, sure. But, I mean, obviously, we're no scientists or we're no doctors, right? So, but we still go out and there, we understand the basics of, okay, eating meat could clog your arteries. But we've always read these things, right? We've not quite seen it. And that scene particularly blew my mind because now I was actually seeing the difference, right? And that's evidence at its very, very core. You cannot deny that. You cannot... those people who agreed to get experimented on have also mentioned that nothing else has changed except just their meal in one night. And you could actually see what people are putting in their bodies. And it's not false. You know, you read a lot of stuff on social media and everyone else is like, oh, this is vegan propaganda and so on. But no, it is actually true, and you're seeing evidence right over there. So that particularly just blew my mind, and I guess it also kind of empowers us vegans who are sitting and debating with non-vegans on why this is good for your health, to actually have a reference point and be like, okay, you know, you can go back and look what it actually does to your blood or what it actually does to your penis or whatever. So I really like that part.
Yeah, and I think even at the end when he's kind of discussing the results and stuff, he does say, right, he's like, look, this is not a scientific study at the end of the day. I mean, we need to do that across thousands and thousands of people. But the important thing is we just wanted to be able to show you as athletes, you three that are in the room with us right now, what it does to you. And I mean, you know, in the first sample that they had, the three people, one of them was actually, he was already plant-based. And so he had two meals plant-based and his blood was pretty much the same, whereas there was a stark contrast for the other two. And I think it's so important to kind of start to understand that, because it's something, this is, as you mentioned, this is the thing that gets debated so much, right? It'll be like, okay, well, you're not getting enough this and getting enough that and all of these different conversations. Whereas you can just prove that. And I think that message is so important, that even one meal starts to have an impact on your body. Which, I mean, as we talked about, and I think this is a very important part, because this is the part I've heard a lot about, and we talked about the masculinity angle of how they sort of showcase this. Now, for those of you who haven't watched it, I mean, there are female athletes that are featured as well. It's not that that's not the case.
Very few, though.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what I was going to say. Like,
Sadly, very.
But I think I think proportionally, yes, it wasn't an equal representation, but I think partly was also, I think the larger message that they were trying to drive was towards men. I do believe so, because it was very focused on that, which I think is super interesting from the point of view of just the way they wanted to communicate that. Now, across the documentary, they talk about multiple places where this applies, right? They talk about toning and physique and muscle building and all of this. But of course, we continue the story about the same researcher kind of doing the secondary test, you know, had to do with a thing that is very masculine, very masculine, but also very sexual, right? In terms of its, in terms of monitoring health of their erections, like overnight after a plant-based dinner versus an animal-based dinner. And I think that's why I feel like, you know, that the fact that they focused on that, it kind of tells me that as a larger picture, they were really trying to hit on the masculinity athlete. Men need to be like this. And they talk about that even on the food side, right? Like, look at all the marketing that shows, like, eat meat like a man, like, and all of those sort of stereotypes that have been developing over the years. And I think that's why the documentary was targeted in the way it was, which then would be one of the reasons why they didn't focus so much on the... on women athletes in general, although there were a few.
Yeah, and I see why there would be fewer, because statistically I'd reckon there would be more female vegans than male vegans for this precisely this reason, right? Meat for the longest number of years now has been marketed as being masculine. Barbecues are something that guys get together and do, you know, fishing and all these things. So... I was quite amazed at all the ads that they showed from the past of McDonald's and Burger Kings, and just saying that, okay, be a man, eat meat, like you mentioned. And you're just like, what? And at the end of the day, your food habits are driven by marketing gimmicks all around, right? And the more we progress in technology and in life, the more it is driven by social media, by influencers, by just ads, by brands. You're constantly brainwashed in society, not only just for your food habits, but the majority of it comes on the food habits, right? And then this they obviously interview this doctor. I don't have the name of him now, but he mentions that for him masculinity is basically endurance, sexual prowess, fertility, right? If you're looking at it from that aspect, on how much of a man are you? And then, like you mentioned, then they transition into having another test over three guys and their frequency of erections and the hardness of the erections. And it's shocking. Like, one of the guys had 500% more frequency of erections
like
in one night.
It was an improvement, yeah,
night. But 500%, yeah. Right? Now, of course, people will come back and debate and say that, oh, okay, but this was just one night. It could have been anything. But... the fact is that at this stage, this is the experiment has been done on their plant-based meal. And these are the results that you've shown, right? So people are obviously welcome to do this experiment on themselves.
Let's be honest, like, men talking about sex and men talking about the fact that they're good in bed and all of those things that come around that, yeah, is this sign of masculinity, right? As you mentioned, the guy actually explicitly states so, but it's just one of those things where, you know, you be an athlete, you look a certain way, you have this good physique, you work out and build muscle and so on and so forth. And then, you know, as a result, you not only are you more attractive, but you're the one that's going to be like phenomenal in bed or whatever that. So by really sort of hitting or talking about that thing in particular, I think it's just something that will hit home. It may not be something that gets discussed a lot, but I think any guy watching that will kind of sort of just for at least 2 minutes, rethink what the hell he's eating. Even if it's just his dinner, right? Like, because it's such a contrast. You know, nearly 20, I think 15 to 20% improvement in the health of the erection, I think it was. And then, but the, like, between 400, 300 to 500% improvement in the longevity of it and how many they had and all of that. And I think that's something that, like I said, you know, every guy, like this is the locker room joke of talking about that kind of stuff. And so I think that's why it will hit really, really hard, because it's something that you sort of turn around and go like, wait a minute, like one meal of meat can reduce this by 300%, 400%, 500%, which is a lot.
And just besides that, the other argument that you get from men in this masculinity section is about man boobs and hormones, and that's what they cover, right? They talk about and I have received it a lot personally when I'm sitting on at my work table eating lunch. I told you, right, in one of the episodes I did mention every other lunch day is discussing my veganism. People are just fascinated. They want to make fun. They want to make jokes and feel good about themselves and so on. And every time I've heard about soy, estrogen, man boobs and so on. And this documentary also speaks about that and says that soy basically has phytoestrogen, which is not the same as estrogen. And in fact, what was interesting for me was that the phytoestrogen actually blocks out regular estrogen from entering your body. So it is kind of more beneficial, not only that it just exists and doesn't do anything, but it is actually beneficial to fight the estrogen that would cause man boobs in your body. And this is what dairy does, right? It's milk for another mammal completely that you're drinking. And it obviously has different kinds of hormones and different kinds of estrogens on it that is not meant for human beings. And I guess that's where you get your man boobs from. So that was, I wish they would have delved a little bit more into it. And this entire documentary in general spoke a lot about meat, but barely about dairy. So I wish that they had spoken a little bit more, and this was a good opportunity to speak more in detail about it. But anyway, I'm glad that they did speak about it a little bit. So so that's another myth debunked.
I think this is one of those things where, look, at the end of the day, I think we all at least sort of or should understand that processed food, just about any kind of processed food, there is an amount of there are certain problems that come with it anyway. We may still want to eat it, we may still want to do, but that's different. But like that, there's always going to be a problem there. When it comes to, I think, soy and soy products, I mean, there's already been, I think, over the years, just because of all these conversations around estrogen in particular, that there's always been this sort of differentiation that's already started happening, where there's processed soy products, stay away from, but, you know, decent tofu or
tempeh,
edamame, and all of those things being good ways to sort of get the protein without the harmful effects of processing. So, of course, processing and stuff, I know, I do know, by the way, and I felt this just as a, and again, this is purely anecdotal, it's not scientifically researched, but I know, because I used to drink a lot of soy milk at some point, and I definitely did not feel good, right? It was causing problems for me. I was feeling lethargic, I was feeling other things, and actually just cutting out soy milk solved that for me, personally. So that's why generally I tend to avoid soy milk now, because I don't feel like it agrees with me so well, right? But for sure, I would imagine that if it was fresher soy milk, less processed, not necessarily bottled and packaged and sent to me, it may not necessarily be the same thing. So it was super interesting chemically to understand that it's not so much that just soy products are not what is going to kill you. It's the same story as has always been the case, which is processed food is going to turn out to be crap anyway.
Conor McGregor, who's shown to kind of be this guy who's like, oh, I eat steaks for lunch and dinner, and he's Irish, and he's all about give me my beef and give me my meat for protein. The everyone else who does not eat meat is a complete sissy, and he's not man enough to fight me in the ring and things like that. He's in this press conference and he has a fight with Nate Diaz, right? And he makes all these lion jokes and, oh, I'm so strong and you're a gazelle and you can never beat me kind of things. And the guy is just quietly listening. He's obviously irritated by the way McGregor is speaking with him, right? But he's just quiet. He's like, yeah, okay, fine, I'll show you. And of course the fight happens and guess who loses? So McGregor has obviously lost, right? And he can't show face to the same press conference now. So he's like, yeah, I felt a little low on energy and it must probably be all the steaks that I've been eating. So it's amazing how... this is funny, right? So at the ring, when he's announced the winner, the guy's like, so how do you feel about it? He's like, I'm not surprised, right? and then at the press conference, McGregor's like, it's probably all the stakes. So it's kind of nice to see that he recognizes why it happened.
You know what was interesting, by the way? It actually went, I think one of the reasons why he realized that is because he was touting the fact that before his fight, he was eating steak for 2 weeks. Right, that was all of his meals. Like, so I think, and that's why it was this realization, because not only was he doing that so much, but he was also like, he made it the whole point of this like rivalry with him and everything, which is why I think that that's why as you mentioned, I think that's why he realizes that almost instantly that it must have been all the steaks I've been eating. Now, whether he actually converted or whether he realized or whether he just blamed it on the quality of the meat is another matter entirely. But I think, which is something Tatiana mentioned also, is like this endurance thing is actually really, is something, by the way, which I didn't realize people are really concerned about. So a lot of people, I mean, all through multiple athletes on the documentary talk about the fact that their ability to train has improved, much like their ability to also be out and do things. I mean, we had this guy who was scaling this massive hike and he did it 3 hours ahead of a world record just because he was able to, you know, his recovery was so much better than everybody else. I've heard this from people as well to say, yeah, one of the things that has definitely happened as someone who works out and works out really much is the amount of time it takes me to recover from one of these intense sessions is actually a lot shorter ever since I've been on a plant-based diet. And I think that that is something that they were highlighting strongly, but it's also something that I'm hearing now from people that actually it matters a lot to them. The fact that they're not able to go back and train or not able to wake up go in the next day and get back to it, which is something that has started to improve. So even James Wilkes, you know, as he's talking about his story, about the fact that he can go through this, what is it called? The rope charging? I forget what it's called. But you know, the fact that he's able to do this for an hour compared to 10 minutes. Now, of course, it's not like it happened overnight. It obviously took time. But again, it goes back to endurance and the ability to be fit, not just be fit and lead a healthy lifestyle, but also be able to endure and you push your body to do more because your recovery is so much better than when you're not.
Yeah, and I guess one important point that they make over there, you hear a lot of people going off carbs these days, right? Because they think that, okay, and they're then switching on just to protein and hardcore protein all the time. So they're not eating any carbs. But one point that they make over there is that carbs is actually essential for all the energy that you have in your body. They are the ones that turn the glycogen into energy and help you. And that's what McGregor did not do. He was just eating hardcore protein, animal protein, which also may or may not be debatable, the right kind of protein, right, for his body. And he's obviously not eating the carbs, but protein is required for the strength of your body and carbs are required for the energy. So sometimes it's a little bit frustrating when I see people going on diets and they're like completely stopped carbs. And I'm like, you fifth grade biology, right? You carbs are essential to your body. They are most of your body. Like you cannot, it's like stopping drinking water, I feel. And I'm just like, okay, fine. So all these, it was kind of like a bit of a slap on the ketogenic. That's the one that asks you.
Yeah, they talk about, they did mention the keto diet actually.
Yeah, so that's very subtly kind of like, okay, that's just a lot of boo hockey. And
you were really dying to use that word, were you?
Yeah, so that was quite interesting. I've learned a lot from this, even though I don't need to convince myself to go vegan, but I think this was really, really informative, this entire
documentary. So I think that's the thing that struck me as well, right? Like, I had heard so much about it before I watched it. Watching it, knowing a lot of the stuff about the fact that actually this is a healthier way to eat and healthier things to put in your body, but still having something to take away from it, right? Something to learn, something to realize, something new. I mean, whether we talk about the estrogen or we talk about, as in the soy milk stuff, whether we talk about, like I said, for me, I didn't feel like it was an intense feel, but I still learned a lot, right? I learned a lot about I learned a lot about the stories of some of the athletes, which was nice to hear. But I also learned a lot about in terms of just facts and other things that I think are an important aspect to all of this. I think even scientifically now, just in the community in general, there is a lot of conversation around diets not being good, right? Which is something that, like, in just 10 years ago, it was like every diet. And even like 2 or 3 years ago, there was one new diet coming out and saying, we're going to get rid of this food group now, and we're going to start this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this. And I think it's so important. I mean, we've learned, as you mentioned, you know, from how long ago, that at the end of the day, you know, a well-balanced diet is the right diet to have. Now, everybody's lifestyles are different. I mean, the more rigorous, the more athletic, or the ones who are training for things, yeah, you have to adjust that too. I don't think you can just say, you know, equal proportions of everything. Of course not. But I think it's so important to realize that carbs are actually essential for you. Protein helps you build muscle, but it's carbs that actually, you know, help your energy levels. And it's something that I have learned the hard way, by the way, because I've been on those diets, by the way. There have been times when, you know, initially in a bit to lose weight, but just I landed up feeling better. I started cutting out all the carbs wherever I could. I mean, not all the time, but wherever I could. And I realized after a while that my energy levels started dropping, right? So I was feeling better in terms of just general well-being, but I couldn't get through a day without feeling exhausted. And then, you know, slowly sort of working it out and realizing that my problem wasn't carbs, it was processed carbs, right? So I was eating like crap bread primarily, which was, you know, or whatever, like processed tortilla wraps and other things related to that. That was actually the problem. So by reintroducing decent carbs, so now I generally tend to eat, say, for example, things like sourdough and stuff, which, A, being vegan, but also being, generally most sourdough is not stored for so long. It's freshly made, and therefore it's a little bit better. And there's a science to why sourdough is better than other stuff and all of that. But I realized that was one of the problems. So today, I know for a fact, on a day when my energy is low, I will go for the carbs right away. Like, I won't even think twice about it. But I've done that, where I've actually gone out and sought out things that I would normally be like, why should I eat this? Oh my God, like my diet is going to get affected now. But instead, actually realizing that actually if I have half decent quality bread or even fries for that matter in those moments, like my energy level just really kicks off and I can get through the rest of the day.
Yeah, and that's what naturally your body craves. Right? When you're just tired and you just want some energy and you're like, okay, what should I eat for dinner? The first thing I think of is pasta.
Or you're drunk and your body's craving energy, yeah, again. It's the same philosophy, by the way. The reason you think of fries and pizza when you're having a late night is because of that. Because your body's like, hey, I'm kind of like feeling dehydrated and low in energy. Sort me out, dump carbs in me and I'll feel better.
Yeah. I want to give a shout out to the vegan Hulk that they show in this movie.
Patrick Babumi?
Yeah. I love his beard. Big fan of his beard. Never seen anything like that before. So that's one. I just wanted to say that and get it out of the way. But I think one good thing that they showed in this documentary is, okay, fine. Yeah, there are athletes, there are runners, this, that. What about strength? What about bodybuilding? What about weightlifting and things like that? And then they show this dude. And it's quite cool, right? They show him like overturning an entire car and just picking up, I don't know, like crazy amount of weight. And all his t-shirts have gorillas on them, right? And it says beast mode on, and it says vegan beast, and it says compassion. And it's quite amazing to see how he managed to do all of that on just plant-based diet. Like, you don't need more evidence than that, you know? And this guy is not just, okay, just turned vegan for a documentary or has just started looking into it. He has been vegan for I don't know how many number of years now, and they also show a lot of snippets from starting from 1908, when there have been vegan athletes since then, right? And they show the entire theory of why. There's this one guy who I can't remember the name now, but who started off by putting out this theory that meat is essential if you want to build your body and if you want to have protein and things like that. But not everyone was convinced. And then they show how many other athletes from the 1900s are into this, right? We've right now, the world is just awakening to all this revolution, but this has been going on for a very, very long time now. So I guess that was quite cool. And I say that because I was, you and I just were watching Joe Rogan. He also had a bit of a face-off with Patrick Baboumian on... they kind of had this fight over vegan versus non-vegan, and Joe Rogan was like, "You're full of bullshit," and the other guy was like, "No, you are," and so on. But Joe Rogan obviously wanted to, Joe Rogan being Joe Rogan, wanted to ride on the popularity of the Game Changers and started and had an episode to debunk the Game Changers, because otherwise he wouldn't have the originality to do so. So he mentioned that, you know, during the Game Changers, you're showing all these athletes and you're doing these tests on them. But the fact is that we don't have evidence. And you're like, but there are athletes like Patrick and Arnold and all these people who've been doing it for years. What more evidence do you need? They swear by it. They're mentioning that their performances have changed. Carl Lewis mentioned somewhere that at age 30, he gave his best performance ever in his life on a plant-based diet. And this was obviously an X number of years ago. So that's enough evidence to convince you that, yes, plant-based diet is the right way to go.
So, you know, I mean, one of the first times I heard about Patrick Baboumian, in fact, was because of Javi, who had been on our show like last year, when we were talking about stereotypes in the thing. And, you know, we were talking about men again. It was sort of similar conversations around gender and all that. And how Javi, who's someone who loves bodybuilding and he loves toning and working out and all that. And so he was kind of saying that, you know, it's kind of rubbish that... What is this dumb link that we've established between weight training, masculinity, and having and eating meat? It's like, it's rubbish. Look at Patrick Baboumian. He used Patrick as an example. And so, you know, again, for people who haven't watched perhaps or whatever, I mean, Patrick Baboumian recently broke world records in terms of, you know, lifting 550 kilos across 10 meters. And I think I just saw now it's 560 kilos.
That's what they showed on the documentary.
Yeah. 160 kilos for 28 seconds, again, being like world records when it comes to, you know, in terms of strength. He makes the point, and a couple other people make the point as well. I think James Milks make that point as well, right? It's so funny. Like, you hear these things, it's saying as strong as an ox. Guess what? Oxes are vegetarian, like oxen are vegetarian. Or we look at figures of people a figure of animals like the gorillas and those kind of things. And again, it's like this thing where you're like, you know, or an elephant, right? Like these tremendous animals who are vegetarian, which is crazy if you think about it, right? Like the fact that, you know, we think that being big and doing all those things requires you to eat meat, which is just a little bit nuts.
He consumes 5,000 calories of vegan food every day. 5,000. So they also captured the entire ancestors ate meat aspect to it. I don't know if you remember, and they actually spoke about how they did a bit of more digging, and they found out that most of our ancestors were vegetarians and they relied heavily on vegetarian food. Of course, they ate a little bit of meat here and there, but predominantly vegetarians. And then they spoke about how human bodies are designed to be plant-based and not animal-based. They spoke about our vision compared to, let's say, a lion who can only see dual colors, or black and white, whereas we have the ability to see colors, which from the hunter-gatherer time, we were more, well-versed with looking at bright-colored fruits and vegetables. And then also they spoke about the digestive system, that how we have a very different digestive system than a lion, which is more in tune to digest fruits and vegetables and nuts rather than animals.
Yeah, so to add to that, like, so the in terms of the bright colors and stuff, one of the things, again, is around differentiation between what fruit is ripe and not ripe and being able to actually differentiate that, something carnivores cannot do. And then you mentioned the intestine thing as well. It's also about allowing the body longer duration, like the food to be working through our digestive tract for longer, so that we absorb all the different elements of a plant-based diet compared to animals.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously the closest carnivore that I have been around is my cat, right? And they say that you, obviously they say that you can't give salt and sugar to your pets because that could be fatal, but also a cat would never know the taste difference between salty food and an unsalty food, right? They can only taste flesh and meat, and but that is the taste bud that we have as humans, and we can differentiate in that food. And another thing that they spoke about, how human bodies do not have the capability to produce vitamin C, and vitamin C is only found in plants. And the reason that we are heavily reliant on plants is because we are not able to produce some of these nutrients ourselves. And eventually they spoke about the entire teeth thing, that how, so they put like the skulls of a carnivore, and then they put the skull of a human, and they showed the difference between the teeth, which, in case people haven't seen already, we are not carnivores and we do not have canine teeth. Obviously, a lion or even a cat, for that matter, has the ability to eat an animal raw and live and tear into the flesh, which we cannot do. Our teeth is more to bite into fruits and vegetables. So they actually spoke about all of that in detail on how naturally we are more designed to eat fruits and vegetables. So it kind of amazes me how people still believe that no, you know, we're obligate carnivores and oh, ancestors ate meat and all that jazz. One interesting thing she mentioned, that this entire thing about ancestors eating meat came from the fact that when they were, archaeologists were kind of digging and they found a lot of animal bones. So animal bones obviously don't disintegrate, right? And there were fruits and vegetables that are obviously gone away from there, right? So they, and that's why they couldn't source it. And so people started believing that, okay, we predominantly ate meat, but that was untrue.
Yeah, and I think what was interesting also, and I think they focused a lot on Roman athletes as part of the
gladiators.
So athletes, I think like the sporty people. Yeah, it wasn't about the royalty. It was actually about the athletes, and that was the differentiation. They sort of highlighted that the athletes, the gladiators, and those kind of people were actually heavily reliant on a plant based diet, which they were able to do based on bone analysis now, which is something that they did not have before, and therefore they didn't have a way of determining that before. So they had to do it based on just the evidence of what they had collected, but now they were actually able to scrape bones and look at the bone density and bone structures and realize that that was due to or that the kind of bone formation that they had was definitely meant that they were predominantly eating a plant-based diet compared to a meat diet. So it's something I think partially it's the evidence was not understood correctly, and partially I think the problem is that we want to believe, and we have, I think, industries that are trying to make us believe that meat is what we did, and therefore it's a natural process for us. But I mean, going back to even the jawline and stuff like that, I mean, this is a debate we've had even with people, to be like, yeah, but we have canines. Yeah, the teeth are called canines. It doesn't mean we have canine teeth with the ability to tear through raw meat. Like, that's the purpose of that. The tooth that you're trying to define is a canine tooth. Is supposed to have that that ability, which we do not have. We just have teeth that are called canines. It's very different from the ability that we don't have teeth that the function of our teeth is not the same as the function of a dog's tooth, for example, right? Like it's just one of those funny things. So I think that that's again, you know, by the way, studies have been showing this for many years now. It's just kind of not mainstreamly accepted in a way that like our jawlines and our jaw structures are more similar to things like chimpanzees and gorillas and stuff who eat predominantly plant-based.
Yeah, and if you diss the theory, then you're just dissing the entire concept of evolution. Also, Earth is flat. I mean, if you believe that we have evolved from apes essentially, and you know, family of chimpanzees and gorillas, some of us except haven't evolved at all. Chirag just, I don't know what happened, but
I got a little static.
Oh, you got static. I thought you just like banged your nose in the mic or something.
Like it was this close and suddenly it was like...
Ouch. Ouch.
And then like I've got my beard out, so it's just like...
Ouch. I hate when that happens. I get it every day when I'm shutting my car door. Yeah, of course I do. What do you think? Would women don't have facial hair? Is that where we are getting at now? We need an episode on this, please. I have a lot of opinions that I need to express. But yeah, I mean, if you believe that theory of evolution exists and Charles Darwin was indeed right, you can't call yourself a carnivore and say, oh, lions ate meat, so will I.
Yeah, that argument always gets me though. I mean, like, you know, lions live in a jungle and they, you know, shit in the grass. Like, I mean, you know, it's not really like, you can't start comparing yourself like only one way, right? You have to compare yourself holistically. Like,
yeah. Also, if the earth were flat, cats would have knocked everything down.
That's not a random thought at all, is it?
No, it's a social media meme, but it's so true. So, in conclusion...
Her Indian school ancestry just coming out there.
LHS is equal to RHS.
QED.
Hence. the end of the documentary was actually really beautiful, according to me. They interviewed this guy called Damien Mander, who is the founder of the International Anti-Poaching Foundation. And it was so amazing to see the kind of work that he is doing, right? He's training all these rangers to go out there on the field and protect all these animals from poaching and being hunted for their tusks or whatever. And he makes a statement where he says that, you know, I was spending my day protecting animals and at night I was putting them in fire to eat them. And at some stage I was like, wait, I'm just full of shit. That were his words, right?
The best example of sort of like cognitive reconnect, yeah. Right? Like that you want to be able to see. I think that was brilliant, actually.
Yeah.
In just his realization of, which is something we talk about a lot, right? Like his realization that I can't distinguish between the animals. So either I eat them all and I don't care, but if I care so much about preserving animals, just because they're, yeah, and he even actually clarifies that, right? He was like, I justified it to myself for a while, yeah, saying that, well, you know, cows aren't going extinct, so it's okay that we kill, yeah, them versus, say, rhinos, whom he was initially starting to protect and so on. But then after a while, he realized, like, he's like, I always knew it deep down that I was just justifying this to myself in this manner, but it was not true. And I think that that was such a great example of that kind of reconnect to be like, okay, actually, you know what? This doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah. And he did say that the only way to protect an animal is to by not putting it into your mouth, which is brilliant, right? And that is so true. And I guess I'm glad that they ended this documentary speaking about this particular aspect of cognitive dissonance and also speaking about how animal agriculture is ruining the planet. At the end of the day, that is what matters the most. And if people start understanding that their health is secondary and it is the planet that we have been given to live on is of primary concern, it is other animals and their well-being. I mean, at some stage they mentioned about animal agriculture and they mentioned that animals consume 6 times more protein than they actually give out, right? Which is basically you're using all the land, all the arable land in this world to farm animals, and you're feeding them all the soys and all the corns and all the vegetables.
I think that was one of the best pieces of data that came out of this documentary.
Yeah.
Because I realized, I think, this argument gets made a lot. And I've heard this as well among meat eaters, that what are they talking about? At the end of the day, you know, to feed you plants, you know, we have to deforest. Right, because it's your plants are you're taking away plants which are so essential to the ecosystem and stuff. It's better that we kill the animals and eat that because at least you're
Yeah, and essentially you're feeding them protein, plant protein, so that you can have that protein instead of just eating the plant protein directly, right? And
but this is one thing that I feel like it's such a simple sentence what you just said, and yet you know, and as much as I do, how many times that argument does not go down?
No, it doesn't. Not only the resources that we're using for animal agriculture, right? So somebody mentioned on the documentary that there's 2,400 liters of water used for one hamburger, just one, right? And that's crazy. But also what a lot of people don't realize is the water pollution that they mention. And they say that the waste from animals in agriculture is 50 times more than all the human waste in the world that goes into the water. And that's huge because there are 8 billion of us, and obviously there's a lot of waste that we create in this world anyway. Can I just say one thing? And I know we've really gone very long with this episode, but this is such an exciting episode, right? But one thing I want to say to people that are the likes of Joe Rogan, right, whose only good trait is his bald head. like shiny, bright like a sun. So people keep saying vegan propaganda. Yeah, people keep saying, and he's also mentioned it. He had a 3 hours long YouTube video, of which we only watched probably 3 minutes or something, and then we're like, okay, this makes no sense to us. But there is no vegan propaganda. The carrot industry is not coming and telling you start eating more carrots, nor is the corn industry, nor is the strawberry industry. These industries exist. Non-vegans are funding these industries by eating them anyway. The only propaganda that is being happening, all these studies that are being happening about eggs being good for you, dairy being good for you, are from those standard industries of meat, beef, pork, dairy, eggs, chicken. There is no propaganda in saving the environment. There's no propaganda. And, you know, a lot of people give a lot of shit to that little girl, Greta Thunberg.
Yeah.
She's so influenced by the left wings and, you know, liberals are crazy and she's doing this and she's doing that. Well, what is the harm if she's talking about making the planet better, even if it is being influenced, even if there is some kind of a backstory to it or whatever? The fact is that this is not a propaganda. There are people who have actually seen what kind of deep shit we are in when it comes to the environment and the planet, and we are just trying to save it as much as we can.
Yeah, I have my reservations with regards to her as well, but I completely agree. I think there are we have seen so many examples of this, not just from a food point of view, but many other things, where sometimes you always need this sort of character to create the movement. You need the character to mainstream things. The fact that she drove so much conversation in those few days meant something, right? It was important, I think. Whatever be the reason why you had the conversation, at least it sort of shone a light on the right platforms towards the fact that the environment was being harmed and something had to be done about it. I think a documentary like The Game Changers, and I'm telling you this purely because from what I've heard, I've been hearing about vegan documentaries for years from vegans about how, you know, watch this documentary, it'll change your life. Watch this thing, it'll change your life. This is the first time I have heard about the documentary from meat eaters. And I think that that is so telling to me personally, just as someone who's observing this, that this perhaps is the right approach to taking, to talking to the kind of people you really need to influence by showing them what matters to them. We've had this conversation on the show so many times about sometimes it's not necessarily just showing a blooded carcass. Is that the right way to influence somebody? And I think it is in some cases. But I think, like I said again, for me, the fact that I heard from so many meteors, as did you, about this documentary is testament to what it has been able to achieve.
Can I go out and play now?
Sure. So I think in conclusion, you know, I want to hear from our listeners as well, as we always do. If you guys have watched it, tell us what you thought about it. Criticize us if you feel like, you know, you didn't actually enjoy the documentary for whatever reason.
Or you don't enjoy Joe Rogan's shiny head.
Or you enjoy it, depending on how you feel. But also, I think if... I'm guessing not too many meat eaters listen to our show. But if you are one and you watched it, I really want to hear from you guys too about what you thought of the documentary, because I think it had an interesting impact. You can reach out to us by DMing us on Instagram. Generally, that's the.2@vegans. And you can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, leave us a comment there. So tons of ways to get in touch with us. You know, find us wherever you feel like finding us. But tell us, what do you think?
Until then, be nice to animals, be nice to the planet, be nice to others, and be nice to yourself. Goodbye.
Wow.
Nadias. Piers Morgan.
No.
Hold the door. You have to put this in the episode.
At the end, as we do.
No, don't.